And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
We are recording this on a Tuesday morning, and the shocking news that we're leading off with is the Wizards lost a game. Who saw it coming? You know who saw it coming? Ben Standing saw it coming, because when he picked the remaining games on the schedule last week, he had the Wizards winning all of them, and then you know what? He thinks they're going to lose to the Spurs. The Spurs are the intuitive loss there. And then guess what? They go to overtime with the Spurs. They end up losing. Bradley Beal has a late technical foul call. DeMar DeRozan goes for 37 or whatever it was without hitting a three. Crazy offense in that game. They end up losing in overtime, but they've still won 10 out of 12. Defense has been much better. They're legitimately hot as they go into a nationally televised game against the Lakers on Wednesday. And here to talk about it is the schedule Nostradamus himself, Ben Standing.
Wait, I thought this was an emergency Mo Wagner signs with Orlando podcast. What are we doing here?
There you go. Yeah, I said Nostradamus. I'm tired enough this morning. I'm tired enough from covering a good team now, which I apparently have forgotten how to do, that I'm saying Nostradamus instead of Nostradamus. That's where we're at. But here we go.
Close enough.
Let's talk Wagner. Let's talk the guy who leads the league in charges per 36 minutes still for a second straight season.
Sure. Let's do that. I will say this, like, a lot of the times I think whether people are conscious of this or not, like when people talk about players they think are good or bad, it is really just about aesthetics that you enjoy on some level. And I will just say that defensively, I much prefer the Daniel Gafford model to being in the paint than the Mo Wagner model. I'm not a big charge guy, let's just say. So that's not my ideal playing defense. Gafford being active, mobile, at the rim, aggressive, I'll take that version.
You know who else will take that version?
Scott Brooks.
Yeah, I was going to say the Wizards, because that's what they did. And you know what? Contesting shots as a big man turns out has some value. I mean, Wagner, the thing with Wagner is that he wouldn't contest shots. Everything was either a charge or a block, and that was it. And he wouldn't contest shots. And you know what's a crazy thing with the Wizards? You look at this streak, they're just doing so much of a better job of contesting shots in general. And this isn't a Mo Wagner point anymore. This is a Wizards improving on defense point. They're doing so much of a better job contesting shots at the rim. You look at the advanced stat data, and they've got 10 guys who are in the top 10 right now in contesting shots at the rim, according to the Second Spectrum tracking data. So on layups and dunks that Robin Lopez, Alex Len, and Daniel Gafford contest, all those guys are in the top 10 in terms of percentage allowed on the rim, on those kinds of shots, just layups and dunks that they contest at the rim. It's a huge change. They're playing a guy who can actually make a difference at the rim pretty much all the time with that three-center rotation. It's still kind of weird and crazy and quirky, and I don't even know what to make of it that they're playing a three-center rotation, but it does give someone who actually makes an impact, whether it's a shot blocker like Gafford or just kind of a shot annoyer like Lopez, and it's made a difference for their defense. They were terrible contesting at the rim for 2.5 years straight, and now they're not at all. It's made a big difference.
I have the memory of a gnat. I assume gnats have no memory. If we were going to do a thing of like what's been the most impressive aspect of during this winning streak, I don't know what I would tell you. Definitively. But one thing that stood out to me, especially in the recent games, was when they played Cleveland the other night. And like, you know, there's always those players for any given team that you kind of look at with like, that should have been our guy or something like that. And like Jared Allen, like who knows if Washington would have ever actually drafted him with the pick that they traded in the Nicholson Bogdanovich trade. But you always kind of looked at that as like, oh, this is part of it. You know, they don't keep Bogdanovich, and this Jared Allen guy is you know, turning into a pretty good thing. And he's the type of athletic, mobile, above the rim big man that this team has lacked for a long time. I mean, Gortat was obviously very good, but a below the rim kind of center, Mahimi as well. And then you see Gafford playing against Jared Allen the other night. And I'm not saying that Gafford is as good as Jared Allen, who is becoming a pretty interesting young big in this league. But it is, from for the first time in forever, the Wizards have a physically gifted player comparable to that that they could use out there in the same way, and have somebody who is mobile and rangy and you know, could run the court and all that stuff, play above the rim. And it was really interesting to see that dynamic, especially against, like I said, a guy who you know, at least in my head, and I think probably for some others as well, is sort of the poster child of what they've been lacking on some level at that position because of that trade.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. He can hang with those guys. There are so many players like that in the league, just kind of the big, athletic, above-the-rim center who's going to rim run, who's going to set screens, who's going to block shots. There are a lot of guys like that. I mean, the Knicks have multiple. You got Mitchell Robinson there. You got Nerlens Noel, who's having a great year. He was incredible the other day against Toronto. I mean, he just destroyed them. And he's having a great defensive season. He's, you know, that guy who you can bring in, the energy big, who's going to be really athletic. There are the Jared Allens. There are, you know, on the high level, there's your Clint Capella and your Rudy Gobert. There are just so many big men like that. JaVale. There's so many guys out there who you can just kind of go pluck. And the difference, what the Wizards kind of have to figure out with Gafford, and there's no way they can know for sure, and obviously so far the returns are extremely encouraging, is what level of that type of big man is he? Because if he's really valuable, basically like Jared Allen or better, all of a sudden you've got a guy who you're going to get who's really unique, you know? And if he's Nerlens Noel, then obviously that's a very helpful player, an extremely helpful player. But it's a different kind of level, and it's a more common type of player because it still fits that mold of athletic, springy, shot blocking, but chases too many blocks and, doesn't always finish around the rim and that kind of stuff. And those are more common, a little easier to get, and obviously a lot cheaper on the market, where centers, you know, seem to, unless you're a really awesome center, centers really seem to cap out around the mid-level exception based on last year's market. And so the Wizards have plenty of time to figure it out. There's no rush. Gafford's under contract for two more years in a very team-friendly contract. He makes less than $2 million a year over the next two. It's like 1.8 and 1.9 or something like that, each of the next two. I mean, it's extremely team-friendly. It's one of the reasons they made the deal. And the Wizards have plenty of time to figure it out, but it's going to be a really interesting thing to track because the returns so far are obviously extremely encouraging. He did not play great against San Antonio. I'd say one of his worst games, but with the Wizards, but he has been really good, and they're 10-2 when they have him on the court, and they've won 10 of their last 12. And by the way, over this 10 out of 12 streak, they're still fifth in the league in defensive efficiency, fifth in the league in points allowed per possession. Even after giving up a million points to the Spurs last night. So the defense has been, it's been legit, and he's obviously been a really big contributor to that. It's been clearly a really clever pickup by them, Shirley.
That is true, but please stop calling me Shirley. Sorry.
Man, way to keep your references timely.
Oh.
Movie's only 40 years old.
Right, I'm nothing if not old school reference guy.
All right, so what is?
The completely irrelevant. Did you see? Oh yeah, you did. We talked. Oh yeah, of course I sent it to you. That IKEA that dude complaining about customers at IKEA, like that just made me think of this. It is the funniest thing I've seen in like a year. I could not stop laughing. Can we quit? I'd like to do a podcast just breaking down those videos. Could we do that at some point?
I think you should do a podcast. I think you should do a Wizards equivalent to that.
Just like what are the things that people say that like the wizard? Hey, why don't the Wizards just go get a first round pick? Well, why don't you tell them how to do that?
Yeah.
Right? Like, what are you gonna do? What do you want them to do? Trade trade Neto for a first round pick? Is that how you think this works?
Yeah.
Let's be realistic.
See, that rolled off the tongue. Right, you could do it easily.
We have a podcast here. Okay, well, I'm gonna need some off season stuff here on my other one shortly because the NFL draft is this week, so I'll need some.
Don't call me shortly. I have a hot take. Speaking of Neto, I don't even know how hot it is, but I'm gonna say it. How do you feel about, because I really believe this. I'm not just throwing this out there. I think Howell Neto has been the second, behind Bradley Beal, the second most consistent player for the Wizards this year. And we don't really talk about him on the podcast ever. Maybe because he's so consistent. He just kind of gives them the same thing every night. Maybe some nights he misses some more shots, but he's just kind of pesky defense. And they've had so much inconsistency this year. And Westbrook is obviously having the better season to Neto, but Westbrook will give you something great on one night and then will, miss 8 mid-range bank shots on the next night and have 7 turnovers. Certainly not consistent. I feel like Neto is a guy who we don't talk about very much. And on a team that's had so many up and downs, had some injuries, it had the injury to Thomas Bryant, Rui will have some really nice nights and some absent nights as well. You look at the roster, Bertan started the year really cold and has obviously been super hot lately, but still started really cold. They've really shuffled the back end of the rotation in and out. Ish Smith has been hurt. Neto's just been such a fixture and is really having the best year of his career. He's a really annoying defender. Like you mentioned Nats earlier, his nickname is the Nat, and you can see why. He's just that old bug that keeps flying into your eye. You keep trying to swat it away and you think you kill it, and then it just comes back and flies into your eye again. You're like, freaking, this bug is so freaking annoying. And he's been a fixture for them, and he has been a consequential guy in this defense, jumping from the bottom of the league too. He's not to be ignored. He's been a valuable guy for them and another good pickup on the margins.
Okay. One, yesterday I literally had a gnat or bug fly in my eye, and for 30 seconds I was thought I was gonna need the jaws of life to work this out. So that just brought back some gave me the shakes. But yeah, Neto's been totally solid. I actually was having this conversation yesterday with a friend of mine who's something of a Wizards. He's a Wizards fan, but slash skeptic to kind of what's going on recently, because if you're a fan of a certain age, you're going to be skeptical of anything that's been viewed as positive. But I was saying, let me ask you this question: if we would go through the moves moves in a fair way that they made. I'm not saying the moves they made were the equivalent of, getting Kawhi from the Spurs, but here's the things that they did this offseason. You mentioned Neto, a guy they brought in. What were our expectations? The 11th man, the 12th man, like no expectations for sure. Whether he even makes the roster, I guess on some level, I guess he was gonna make the roster, but deep bench, whatever. He's been pretty much in the rotation to some degree all year. Annoyingly early on when Brooks was playing the 3-point guard thing, but beyond that, that's not Neto's fault. The Wizards, they pick up Alex Len off the street. For whatever the reason, Toronto moved on from him. That's fine. But they pick him up, and he's obviously been a totally solid option. It was very fun against the Spurs and real power dunks. They signed Robin Lopez. I know some people were quibbling about what the $9 million he got, but Robin Lopez, if we're going to talk about that consistency thing, like he's been pretty up there, right, most of the year. And you obviously, and DA just wrote about, how he's been efficient inside. What else? Obviously, they make the trade, right? We talked a bunch about Troy Brown, and maybe they never figured out what to do with him, but they moved on from that and got Gafford, who, as we just discussed, is looking like a legitimate thing. And look, let's not forget the Westbrook trade for, you know, giving up Wall and a first for Westbrook, obviously it was looking pretty awful early on, just because Westbrook, we didn't quite know, was he hurt or did he hit a wall? Clearly it looks like he was just hurt. He's now playing at a level that's so good that, like, it's, I don't think anybody's lamenting at this point that first round pick, although obviously it would be good if the Wizards, you know, contend for real, not just battle for the 10th seed. All that, am I forgetting anything else? Like, all that stuff is pretty interesting. And yes, I guess you can factor in that, you know, the Danny Avdia pick. He obviously looks like he can play. He's not there yet, clearly, for all kinds of reasons, and the season's ended early. But, you know, I wouldn't say that, you know, we can say they could have done something else, but that pick is not looking bad or anything. And obviously, you know, even, you know, going to the year before, Hachimura stepped up. So, by and large, Neto is an example of, like, a lot of these moves were not necessarily wow moves at the time beyond the Westbrook trade. And yet, looking at each of them in totality, they've all done pretty well. And I think that's part of what we're seeing now with this streak. It's not just Beal and Westbrook playing well, but all these other pieces around them are contributing. Even Anthony Gill, who's been a non-factor most of the year, last night, actually, you know, had some good moments in the first half.
Yeah, Anthony Gill coming out of nowhere is an incredible microcosm for all the stuff that's working well for the Wizards right now. You mentioned Denny, by the way. I didn't really get a chance to talk about his season-ending injury in the last pod, and I mentioned we would talk about it for a bit today. And, you know, Denny, obviously, he has the fracture in his leg last week. He's out for another 11-plus weeks. They say he's going to make a full recovery, but clearly his season is done, and that's such an unfortunate way for a rookie season to end, even if it is full recovery. And on the whole, good news, you know, looking at the injury, it just looks like it could have been so much worse. And so you hear full recovery and no surgery, and you're like, all right, well, it's not the worst case scenario, certainly. What is your evaluation? Because you're the Denny stan, I feel like. What is your evaluation of his rookie season? Let's dive into this a little further, because I didn't do it much on the last pod. And you know, he was the ninth overall pick and deserves a little season wrap up here.
Yeah, I mean, you probably can give a more thorough view, because I'm not really looking at, like, all the other picks around him. I know Tyrese Haliburton is an obvious one. He could be rookie of the year, and you know, all the teams who did, you know, what was he, the 12th pick? So all, you know, most of the teams picking, you know, in front of that, you know, people will say, oh, they could have done that, but they could have taken him instead. Okay, but that aside, you know, I like, there's a lot to like about Denny, I think. I mean, his confidence is pretty obvious. His shot is, you know, form-wise looks a lot better than I was, you know, the way it was being described. It was a, you know, real work in progress, and it's, you know, still things to improve on, but look good. And I love pass, you know, passing forward types, and he clearly has a feel for the game as a playmaker. I think, though, that, you know, I was talking about this with somebody yesterday, that I guess my one concern is, and this is sort of, I think, the issue is what happened to Troy Brown a little bit, is the biggest, it seems like the biggest strength of Denny's game is his playmaking to ability. Have the ball in his hands, you know, find teammates, you know, with his pass and so on. But that's not going to be an option, really, with Beal and Westbrook. He's going to be relegated to sort of being playing more off the ball. And right now that doesn't look like where he's at. Now, maybe that evolves over time. You know, sure. But I'm just saying, like, I don't know. We may not see the best version of him possible over the next couple of years if they keep everybody else intact, which makes me then, I guess, I don't want to say question the pick. And right at the time they made the pick, they didn't have Westbrook, but I guess they would have had Wall, and it would have been kind of the same thing. So that's the only thing I kind of wonder is, like, are we going to be able to see the best version of this kid over the next few years, similar to how I think Troy Brown was minimized because of they had too many other ball handlers. But that said, I think Denny looks pretty interesting to me, and, you know, hopefully they do figure out a way to, you know, put him in position to be more of that playmaking, that playmaker than just a guy who's off the ball.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, the weird thing about Denny, which is kind of a, you mentioned Troy Brown, I think it's a good comp, which is when you draft a guy in the first round, you kind of have to know what he is, you know? I at least, maybe they have a better feeling internally than I do, but I don't really know what he is. He came in as a guy who can make a difference as a playmaker, a secondary playmaker even, and grab defensive rebounds and run the break, and we certainly saw some of that. We saw him move the ball well within the offense. We saw him run fast breaks. He has great end-to-end speed. When he gets a defensive rebound and goes, he is fast as hell for somebody his size. I mean, he can really move. The straight line speed is extremely apparent. The IQ is apparent. The passing is apparent. But you just don't know if it holds up over any amount of volume because he didn't really have an opportunity to do it. The usage rate is ridiculously low. It's something like 11 or 12%. It's an absurdly low rate for somebody who you're trying to see if they can actually make an impact. And the way that they used him was basically, we're going to draft a playmaker and then we're going to stick him on the sideline and Westbrook's going to handle and Beal's going to handle. We're going to try to teach him to be a spot up shooter. And I just don't think you can get a feel for who he is as a player by using him that way. And I get they're trying to win. And I also get that playing with Russell Westbrook is not a conducive, like that's not conducive to developing a playmaker. You can't do that when you have Westbrook out there, and you certainly can't do it when you have Westbrook and Beal out there who are going to command over 60% of your offense just as scorers, let alone as ball handlers. So it's a difficult thing to figure out. But that being said, it's just, you know, it's still unfortunate. I feel like that I don't have really a much better feel for who he is or who he will be than I did coming into the year, because we just didn't get to see that much of it, you know? And I don't know how they could have done it better, because they have Westbrook and they have Beal. But it was tough. And some of it is on Denny, by the way. I feel like a lot of people just totally remove it off of Denny and say, all right, this is just a Westbrook, a Beal, and Wizards thing, and it's how they're using him and nothing more. And that's not necessarily the case. He got very passive in moments, and you know, he's still learning how to be an active cutter, and you know, he would be passive, which, you know, he's a rookie. Rookies are allowed to be passive. It's fine. But you know, whether this is a criticism or merely an observation, it's just kind of reality that I am just not really sure what he will be stylistically as an offensive player after seeing him as a rookie, because he wasn't used in the way that he was billed to be used, you know?
Right. And that's the thing. I think you know, like you said before that I sort of alluded to, but you said it more clearly, like it isn't just enough to say, well, we drafted a three man or what, a certain position. Like, how does he fit in with the other pieces? And, you know, look, I don't think you always want to make every decision 100% based on the fit. Sometimes you do have to take the best player and kind of figure it out. But yeah, in this case, again, they didn't know they were going to have Westbrook at the time, but you know, he was still going to have Wall. So that was going to be a comparable type of ball dominant player. So yeah, it is kind of unusual. Like just because I was thinking about it, he didn't play yesterday, but the Spurs, like a pick or two after the Wizards took Denny, took Devin Vassell, a three man, right? Devin Vassell, who he didn't play last night. I have not seen him play, so don't. I have no idea comparison. But his notion was, this guy's more of a shooter, and he's shooting 39% from three this year. He's averaging about 15 minutes a game. Again, I don't necessarily know how he's comparing overall. It's not, that's only one stat, but like that to me would therefore kind of make more sense, right? To have that type of player alongside Beal and Westbrook would be a better fit. Again, he could be more deficient in other ways, but that would be the type of thing, like, it would make more sense. And to your point, it's like going forward, it isn't just enough to say what I look at Denny, what he is or isn't, but how does he fit in with the team? That's kind of important, especially when you have, you know, Beal and Westbrook, guys who are going to be so ball dominant. Bertans is perfect because he doesn't demand the ball and he, you know, obviously could shoot the lights out. Denny is sort of not that guy, and that's why it'll be interesting to see how they fit. That's also why I think, you know, we said before, if they're going to like take that Robin Lopez money and use it towards somebody next year in free agency, you know, realistically a three man would be the spot, in part because it's unclear that they have somebody ready to go.
Yeah, I like Vassell. I think he's going to be a good player. And I have no problem, by the way, with the Wizards not drafting based on fit. First of all, when the draft came, they didn't even have Russell Westbrook. So, you know, they had Wall, who's a similar player stylistically. But, you know, I understand the Wizards. Not only understand, I like it makes perfect sense why the Wizards would draft the player who they believe is the best available player as opposed to fit. They were coming off of a season in which they, you know, lost at a 50 loss pace. I mean, that's makes perfect sense why you take the player who you believe is, you know, the player who's the highest on your draft board, independent of fit. But the thing is that the developmental philosophy then has to match the best player available philosophy. If you're going to draft for fit and then throw a guy in for fit, okay. There are organizations who have done that, even as losing organizations, and eventually it's worked. I think Phoenix is a good example of that, even though, you know, Phoenix is winning now. And they had some picks who they got criticized for as reaches. I think Cam Johnson is probably the most notable. Where now we look at that Cam Johnson fit and we're like, damn, Cam Johnson's a legit, really contributive rotation player on the second best team in the West right now. And they drafted for fit in a lot of other situations. And it's been fine. It hasn't worked out ideally. Ayton was not the number one overall pick. Luka was. But Ayton is a very good player. And he works well next to Booker. And he works well next to Chris Paul, and that team is winning a lot of games. Then you look at other scenarios where they've whiffed. That's a team that is drafted on fit the last few years with varying results, I'll say. Again, drafting the best available player is fine. It's great. Go for it. Bring in as much talent as you can when you're a team that's not winning games. But then the post-draft philosophy, the developmental philosophy, has to allow you to use that player the way that he's best being used. Otherwise, like you need cohesiveness between every level of the organization. I feel like it came out a little bit in various ways throughout the year. You know, I've mentioned a million times on the podcast how it came out with like the organization picking up Troy Brown's fourth year option and then him not playing, the organization declining Jerome Robinson's and him starting throughout the year, and then Jerome Robinson starting three games and then 3 days later being released. It came out in ways like that where there just wasn't like a same pageness there. I feel like it came out a little bit in the draft strategy versus the developmental as well. But look, it might, I mean, it still might work. I'm not even saying that he's permanent. I'm not saying he's permanently stunted. What I'm saying is I don't know really what he is, and considering how little teams are practicing this year with how scrunched the schedule is, how little the Wizards are practicing, how little they're being able to scrimmage with each other. You know, when the young players play a scrimmage, they're including coaches and stuff who might be former NBA players, but they're a lot of them aren't. Their developmental coaches aren't former NBA players. You know, the ones who are former NBA players are in their 50s. When they're scrimmaging against coaches, it's not the same thing as scrimmaging against Bradley Beal, who's not playing in those. So I don't think you can get a full picture on who he might be compared to another season, even because of the lack of practicing, the lack of shoot-arounds, all that kind of stuff. Certainly they have a better picture than we do on the outside, but
yeah.
I just don't think it can be as good as usual.
Yeah, and just to be clear, like I think that you know, I like Denny. I mean, I generally like his game, like sort of, you know, saying before, like aesthetic-wise, he's the type of player that I like. I like passers in general. So that to me works. And, you know, there's something to be said for, you know, could they figure, like, right, so like Ish Smith and Neto were both free agents. I'm not saying Denny would be, like Troy Brown was at least sort of a sense, like, could he be your backup point guard kind of? That's not the thing with Denny, but, you know, could you hypothetically, if say Neto or Ish Smith did not return, and you brought in a point guard who's more of a, just for argument's sake, more like a Seth Curry type, you know, a shooter more than a distributor. Could you have a second unit where the ball runs through Denny more than it would be in almost any scenario here, because Ish Smith's going to have the ball too. Could you have that kind of scenario where the ball runs through Denny Moore and you have shooters around him like that if it's more of like a straight second unit thing? Yeah, maybe that's something that would help as well. But yeah, anyway, I think Denny's interesting. Like I said, as part of the broader picture, I think it's a fine – it looks like a fine choice, but to some degree, as you said, still need to see Morris to figure out exactly what he is in general and with the team specifically.
Yeah, and to be clear, I'm not arguing – you know, Tommy Shepard said on draft night, I believe it was on draft night, said secondary playmaker, you know, which that doesn't mean secondary playmaker right off the bat. I just, right. You know, I wish we could have a better picture of it. That's all. Okay, we're doing the Standig special. You know what the Standig special is. Or maybe you don't, because I've literally never used that term before.
The delicatessen I like by my house, that's a corned beef on rye kind of thing. But
yeah, with Russian dressing. We're picking schedule games because last time we did this 2 years ago where you picked out random games of the schedule and you got like 11 in a row near the end of the year before there was finally one wrong. And then we did it when we podcasted last week and I forget how many we did, like six.
But, I went back and listened.
Oh, you did your homework. You actually prepared for the podcast.
Yes. Yeah. Mark that down. People, I did homework this episode. You made me predict six games and four are in the book and I went 4-0.
All right. So you had beat the Warriors, beat the Thunder, beat the Cavs, which they did, and then lose to the Spurs, which you played it close, but they lost 146-143 in OT. I will let you repick on the Lakers, knowing that Anthony Davis is back. Home for the Lakers, first nationally televised game. We're picking the schedule and talking this out. They're 27-34 right now and 10th in the East. What say you for the Wizards' first nationally televised game in like 2 years?
Yeah, what a world we're in that the Wizards are a team people want to watch. So the Lakers, right? I mean, they've lost 3 of 4. Utah, 2 to Dallas. They beat Orlando, which, you know, that probably wouldn't happen if Mo Wagner was with the Magic at that point. Okay, just to be clear, LeBron, as far as we know, is out on Wednesday, or we're not sure, but we think he's out probably?
Yeah, I mean, the latest update is no update yet. That is the information we're working with as we podcast. So let's assume he's out.
So obviously, like the NBA national televised games, it's a little bit different than like I like it. Like I say in a like colleges, I always like going against the upstart team that hasn't been in the big spot playing, you know, alma mater, you know, the big school like a Duke or somebody like that who's used to that spotlight. Like they're gonna feel like a little too much pressure. But in this case, with Beal and Westbrook, I think this is an opportunity for them to show everybody what's what. And I think they're going to both rise to the occasion. And look, the fact that the Lakers, again, having watched 0 seconds of this, other than I think I saw some highlights of them playing the Dallas the other day, you know, doesn't look like they're on a hot streak. And this is the last game for the Lakers of a 4-game road trip. So I'm going to stay with it. I picked the Wizards when we did it the first time. You asked me that game as well. So I'm going to stay with it. Whatever I was eating or drinking or whatever else I was doing that day seemed to be working. So I'll go Wizards.
Yeah. They've traded water. They've traded water. Okay. Without their two stars, like if they get LeBron back for the playoffs, which I think they will, then they're going to be fine. No Caruso, by the way, is not anything to sleep on. He's one of their best defensive guards. He's a really good defensive player. And if Caruso ends up not playing in that game where he tweaked his back the other day, if he ends up not playing in that game, then, you know, that's something that's he would be important for them guarding Beal, guarding Westbrook. He's an important player for them. So, okay. I like it. Next up, you got to win over the Lakers 1-0. Next up, you got, let's breeze through them. You got at Cleveland.
I picked the Wizards when you asked me the other day. So let's roll. I'll stay with the Wizards, even though it was close the other night, but I'll go with the Wizards.
All right, 2-0 at Dallas. Now, second night of a back-to-back at Dallas.
Yeah, I don't know if this game will come down to Luka magic. I feel like this could be where they don't just lose, but there's a bit of a drop-off, and they lose by, you know, 8 or more points. So I'll go Dallas.
All right, big home game Monday, May 3rd against the Pacers, which could make a difference. They got two remaining against the Pacers. Could make a difference in terms of ninth place, considering they're two and a half back in ninth right now.
You know, it just in terms of, like, when you look, like, I'm not saying I thought the Pacers were a contender, but it's almost one of the more shocking scenarios to see in the standings where they are, because the Pacers have been nothing else but just consistently solid year in, year out, you know, being in that, you know, 3 to 6 range, it feels like, almost every year. And now they're decidedly not. And I just keep picking the Wizards. I'm going to say the Wizards.
One of the things with the Pacers that's going to be interesting, and they play them twice, is Miles Turner is hurt. And a lot of the Pacers' defense has to do with Miles Turner's rim protection. And the Wizards are good at getting to the hoop. They're really good at getting to the hoop now, and they're good at forcing fouls. I think the Wizards are a tough matchup for the Pacers. And that is not just consequential for the final two regular season games, but the way the play-in tournament works is 7 plays 8 in the first round, 9 plays 10 in the first round, then the winner of 9 versus 10 plays the loser of 7 versus 8 for the 8 seed. And the Wizards would play the Pacers in a 9 versus 10 game if the season ended today. I think they're a tough matchup for the Pacers with Miles Turner out specifically. They're just good at getting to the rim, and that's going to be tough for them. So I'm with you. Home against the Pacers in a regularly scheduled game. Like, I don't think the Pacers, I think that would be tough for them. I think that'd be tough for them, even though Indiana obviously still has good players and Sabonis is a beast. Just in terms of contrasting styles, I think it's tough, and the Wizards are still playing well. All right, we got at Milwaukee.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to say Milwaukee gets the W there.
Yeah, not bold. We've got at the Tampa Bay Toronto Raptors, second night of a back-to-back after the Milwaukee game.
Oh, man, if this was in Toronto, I would pick the Raptors. But as you pointed out, it's in Tampa Bay. You know what? We've had some losses, but there hasn't been a two-game losing streak. So I'm going to call the loss that they drop a second game in a row here and lose at Toronto or at Tampa.
All right. And then we've got third game of a road trip, again, at Indiana.
Yeah, I'll take is that Atlanta that's after that? Is that both games in Atlanta or just one?
Indiana, and then the two Atlanta games are after that.
Right, I'm saying, are the two Atlanta games in Atlanta or are they
both in Atlanta? Okay. It's a 5-game road trip total.
All right, I'm going to say they beat Indiana. They lose. They beat Indiana. They beat Atlanta, but then they lose to Atlanta the second time.
Atlanta's playing really well. And I think Trae Young will be back by then. It sounds like his injury isn't as serious. They're playing really well. Clint Capella's having a great year. Bogdanovich is starting to turn it on. They're getting healthy. They're playing really good basketball right now. Home for Cleveland. Again, they play the Cavs like 30% of their schedule the rest of the way.
Right. That's wild. I guess, you know, on the assumption that these games are still mattering one way or the other, I'll say they beat Cleveland.
All right. And then finally, last day of the season could have play-in implications, even if they're not necessarily playing each other. Home for Eric Collins and the Charlotte Hornets.
Yeah, give me the Wizards. I'm thinking about revising the Atlanta one. I mean, maybe they lose both Atlanta games. I'm trying to, like, because I think if I have them beating Cleveland and Charlotte, then that means they would have gone
6-5 if you have them winning. If you have them losing both Atlanta games and beating Cleveland and Charlotte, you have them 6-5 the rest of the way.
Well, we'll go. What they say, go first instinct. So we'll just leave it. Beat Atlanta the first game, lose the second game.
All right. So you have them 7-4 the rest of the way. That would.
That seems aggressive, but here we go.
That would put them at 34-38 on the season, which is honestly right about where people. I mean, what was their over under? About 34, right? That would put them right about after the slow start, right about where people had them, and 34-38. I'm pretty confident that's getting them into the play-in tournament. They go 7-4 the rest of the way. That really means the Bulls have to go Tampa and the Raptors have to go something like, you know, like 8-3, 9-2, whatever it is, 9-3 the rest of the way in order to just tie them. And those teams have, you know, those teams have the tiebreaker on them, but winning that game in Toronto, or not in Toronto, in Tampa would be really big for them because it just gives the Raptors an extra loss. And I don't think the Raptors, their players, I'm sure, really want to make it, but I think the Raptors organizationally would be just fine getting a good draft pick and punting until next year. So yeah, 7-4. All right. That's the official standing prediction. And you're never wrong on these apparently. So, all right, we got time for one Twitter question. And this one is made for you. This one's from Kike HOG. And he specifically says, which this one is for Ben. And you'll know why, because I just can't answer it. Which team do you think will perform better next season? The Wizards or the Washington football team?
Wait, say it again.
Which team do you think will perform better next season? The Wizards or the Washington football team?
Who do I think will be better next season? That's what you're asking me?
That's what Kike HOG is asking you.
I'll say, oh man, I don't know. Give me, I guess the football team. Boy, I don't know, because it's like I'm trying to view it from like a record perspective. I don't know. By the way, just for the record here, I'll just tell your audience, the football team has just made a trade while we're talking that I was trying to confirm while this was happening, hence my pausing. In any event, that's pretty, I don't know. It's a really interesting question. I mean, the football team, you know, they were 7-9. There's momentum. They add Fitzpatrick. That should help a quarterback. The draft is about to happen. They'll get more stuff. But they also have a really hard schedule next year, relatively speaking, you know, from winning the division and all that. And the Wizards, like, yes, they're surging right now, but I don't know. There's a lot of variables. What's the coaching situation? You know, what do they do with the Robin Lopez money? You know, if they didn't keep Robin Lopez, you know, what strides? I'll go the football team, but I don't know. I'll go the football team.
I love that you're literally tweeting trade reports for another team in another league while we're podcasting. I'm looking at my Twitter right now, and I see you tweeted it. For what it's worth, when I put out the call for Twitter questions, a bunch of them were if they make a play-in, if they make the play-in tournament, or if they make the playoffs, does Scott Brooks get renewed? Everybody says extension. I said in a Q&A with readers like 2 months ago, Scott Brooks is not getting an extension. I think people misinterpreted that as saying there's no way Scott Brooks, there's a 0% chance Scott Brooks is coming back next year, when I meant it literally. He's not getting an extension. His contract is up after this year, and I think the organization will evaluate after that. My answer to all the questions are, if they make the playoffs, does it mean an automatic renewal or an automatic new contract for Brooks? If they make the play-in tournament, does it mean an automatic new contract for Brooks? My answer to that is, I don't know. I don't know. I don't even know if they know to that degree of specificity. I just don't know. I can't say yes. I can't say no. I don't know the answer yet. I would love to know the answer. It would be great to report it if I knew it, but I really don't. I really don't have any idea, and it's hard to get a feel. Everybody in the organization right now seems to be at a really nice high with the way that they're playing, and really believes that they've kind of hit a new stride, and believes that the winning streak means they've really found something and that they can be a good team the rest of the way. And when I say good team, I don't know what however you define good team, but that they can be a team that wins more than they loses, than they lose the rest of the way. And I think people at the organization believe that. I don't know what that means for Brooks. His contract is up after this year. Wouldn't surprise me if there was a new coach next year. But, you know, you never know. I don't know what's going to happen, and I don't know how the organization's going to evaluate it depending on what might happen in the play-in tournament or what might happen in a first-round playoff series or whatever. So I really don't know. I really don't know. Unless, Ben, do you have any more insight into that question than I do?
I do not. I do not.
I don't think there is an answer. I don't think it's that, like, there's an answer out there and we haven't learned it yet. I don't think there's an answer to that question yet.
I don't have anything to add beyond the insight you've provided at this time,
which is no insight at all. Great.
You know what, here's what I can say about that. Like, I value people who do what we do, who admit when there is nothing to add. Because I think too many people front that they have thoughts or takes or insight or sources or whatever, and they don't, or they feel the compulsion to. And I think we all have that at points. But, like, it's okay to say I don't necessarily know yet, or I don't have this particular insight into it, or whatever. That's okay.
Well, if you admire people who have nothing to add, you can subscribe to this podcast, and you can tell your friends about Wizards After Dark, because Lord knows we don't have that much to add. You can go on iTunes. You can give us a 5-star rating. You can leave a written review. Those always really help. And just tell your friends about the podcast if you really enjoy it. Your friends are Wizards fans. They want something to listen to. Tell everybody. Tell your friends. Tell your family. Tell everybody about Wizards After Dark. And you can subscribe to The Athletic. You can read my stories. You can read Ben's stories. You can read David Aldridge's stories. You could read every single story and get a full subscription to The Athletic if you go to theathletic.com/wizardsafterdark and sign up for only $3.99 a month. That's theathletic.com/wizardsafterdark for a full subscription to the entire site. Gets you everything, gets you every single story you could possibly read. Also gets you this podcast and every other Athletic podcast ad-free. Only $3.99 a month at theathletic.com/wizardsafterdark. I had a piece with David Aldridge that came out earlier this week. David and I co-authored it, about Robin Lopez's hook shot. I thought it was a really goofy story. And Robin's just funny. He's a funny person. And the way he plays is just so quirky. And he just doesn't take himself seriously. He has a great sense of humor about himself. And I thought he was just really open to talking about his hook shot in a very goofy way, and kind of acknowledges the quirkiness of it as much as everybody else who watches it too. And when a player is able to look at himself with that perspective, it can always lead to a really fun story. And I had a great time putting that together, and I know David did too. We were laughing a lot when we wrote it about just kind of the analogies we were making with the hook shot and some of the quotes that we had in there. So you can go check that out over The Athletic DC, which, once again, if you're not a subscriber, theathletic.com/wizardsafterdark. The NFL draft is this week, and Ben does an incredible job covering the draft and covering the football team, so you can see all of his coverage. Ben, anything that you got coming up that you want to tell the listeners about?
I'm going to guess there will be a story about the trade that the Washington football team just made on The Athletic at some point today. That's just a guess. I'll have like a final, like, Washington team only mock draft. I'm doing like a version, Fred, where I came up with like three scenarios. I spent an insane amount of time thinking this, because not because it's needed, because I'm insane. And now they just made this trade and completely blows up at least one or two of them. So that's awesome. The podcast, Standard Room Only. I'll be talking about the draft a lot. There's a bunch of NFL draft cover content already on there. You can listen to that. And I will get Fred on there at some point after the NFL draft, mostly to break down whatever the Jets did, but maybe talk about the Wizards.
Yeah, we could talk Jets. So I have a very narrow-minded view of how I follow the NFL. It's really Jets or nothing. So, although I know who Ereck Flowers is. I know who that is. So that must be a big trade. So you should go on and read Ben's story about it. And you can read my stories. You can read everybody else's stories. You can listen to Wizards After Dark. I'll be back with another episode kind of depends on what happens the rest of the week. I might be back with a second episode later this week. If not, I'll be recording another episode early next week. Either way, I'll talk to you guys soon.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.